All right. Well, conclude our study of 1 Samuel today. Still talking with David and his episodes, but talking about David's victory today, but we can all say that in life, you win and you lose. But what would life be like for everybody if you never lost? It would be, would be nice, but do we... Yeah. But do we learn different things about ourselves in the times when we're losing? Do, when we go through crisis, does it, when we come out, can we say we're a better person because of what we experienced? Because it's, not everybody's in tune with this, but Carol can relate, is football season kicks off next week. Your team can't win every game, all the time. Well,
some starting a little controversy.
Just telling the facts. That's all.
And this year,
somebody has to lose, and when you lose, does it? How you react to it, does it speak of your character and who you are? Because if we go back, all the studies we've done with David and Saul, I mean, couldn't David have given up a long time ago? Saul doesn't care about me. He's after me. We studied all that last week. And David could have just given up. But he didn't, because he knew the Lord had a purpose for him and a plan. But I thought today's study was a little interesting in that David, when you think of David, do you think of him just being a mild-mannered person, won't carry a grudge against anybody, doing his daily work? But when you think about in today's lesson, whereas he now is, quote, joined the Philistine army, he's moving with them, he's going around and taking small towns and people and killing them, taking their possessions. Does it throw a thought in your mind, should David have been doing this? But we'll see, like David with the Philistines, there was a point to where the Philistine army told David and his men, go back. We don't need you anymore. You're really not part of our regimen. You need to go back and take care of your own things. But what happens is we see that when David gets back to his homeland, they'd been gone a long time, and the Amalekites have come and destroyed their city. They've taken all their possessions. They've taken all their families and moved on. How do you think David felt at that point? Was he questioning the Lord? Why would you let this happen to me? Or was the aftermath of this, was it the Lord getting David's attention a little bit? I can take everything away from you. But, you know, the thought came in my mind was, had David kind of backed away from his total beliefs a little bit and just going out and taking city after city and what they call plunder, was he kind of gaining what maybe he shouldn't have gained? But it tells us In 1 Samuel chapter 30, it's verses 6 and 8. It says, David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters, but David found strength, and the Lord is God. Then David said to Abiathar, the priest, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. David brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I pursue this raiding party, and will I overcome them? And the answer was, pursue them, you will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. Now the ephod, if I'm pronouncing that right, you could say was maybe a garment or a vest or something that the high priest wore. But there were two components, the Urim and the Thummim. And I kind of did a little research, and you get different answers, but some people think that it might have been like two coins. Some thoughts were they were sticks, and there was a theory on that, that the sticks, one might have been black and one might have been white, and you threw them up, but their comment was, if they both showed up black, that meant no. Well, my question was, how does the white one turn black all of a sudden? Or the black one turned white. But the coins pretty much were that it's, I won't say it's gambling or sorcery, but what they would do is the priest would flip the coins. And ever how they landed, that would be the answer. Now, do we look at things in life? Changing of the seasons. Do we see things happening that make us aware of what's going on? Or in life, do we sometimes look at actions in our lives to try to take and plan what we're going to do next? But do you ever just have a decision to make in life and you flip the coin and it's heads I do this and tails I do that? You know.
Is that how you marry?
Yeah.
Okay. But if, I think we did as we studied the scriptures through the years we studied all this, that, you know, there were people would watch for the signs.
Mm-hmm.
They looked for those signs. And I think we do that, you know, you pray about something and how is it answered? I mean, does it, he doesn't stand in front of you and tell you this is your answer. He places people in your lives and circumstances in your lives that there you know that your prayer has been answered because someone has been there to encourage you or show you the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we look, I think as Christians we look that way. We, you know, just ask it and the Lord. I mean, we saw that so much through Moses and his journey from the beginning of where he was grown up, like the manna and the feeding and the birds and that kind of stuff. So, but I do believe he places people in our lives to answer those questions.
Mm-hmm. But was it wrong of David to do that?
Well, he was human.
He was human, but...
Home and everything that you, in your family and everything is, I mean, is gone. Because somebody took it. And you think about it, you know, your heart's broken. Not that you work for those things, but the people you love the world.
What if, and I always turn things around, what if where they had flipped the coins and they had come up, no. How would David have felt then? You've taken everything away from me, Lord. You know, I've served you, I've done this for you, but now you're telling me no.
Well, we saw that through Job.
Well, Job went through.
Not as busy as David was.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw that through Job's life. You know, he stayed, he questioned things, but he stayed where David got around, he did a lot of things that, you know, Job didn't do some things that he did.
Because in comparison, I mean, David's answer was when that showed that the answer came two yeses, pursue them, for you will certainly overtake them and rescue the people. Now, like I said, the answers or the results was David going on faith? Yes. But this writer points out, God could have said nothing. He could have answered with a no. But if we backtrack a little bit, Saul, in the meantime, is doing the things that he has been doing, and now he is questioning things. But Saul goes to the other extreme. He dresses, he disguises himself. And he goes to what I would call a sorcerer or a fortune teller. And he wants this person, and there was a lady, he wants her to bring up Samuel. Now, why would he want to talk to Samuel? But can you say that Saul being deceiving and not being upfront and truthful, the answer he got was different than David's? Saul didn't get the answer he wanted, and we know that Saul ended up killing himself. Now, in this writer kind of brings out, and it's true in everyday life, if you bring it inside the church, but and we've faced it here, and other churches have, but when a church is in turmoil, really and truly, what should they do?
Pray.
Bickering and arguing doesn't solve anything. But as a group, if you come together, like now David wasn't praying, maybe he had beforehand, but through prayer, you can kind of maybe see things differently, understand situations differently, and work through your problems and resolve them a lot easier. But now David's answer was to pursue, and this lesson tells us that he and his men take out, and on their way to encounter the Amalekites. Now this is, I think, where God places another person in their life. There was an Egyptian man who was a soldier with the Amalekites, and they had moved him away. They had kicked him out. And I think I read because he had taken on an illness. So he wasn't good enough for them anymore. But there he is in David's way. And they take him in and feed him, take care of him. But he directs David and his men to where the Amalekites are. Now, if we read, like in verse 16, it says, he led David down, and there they were, and they were scattered all over the countryside, eating and drinking and reveling because of the great amount of plunder. They were celebrating. Verse 17, it says, David fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day, and none of them got away except 400 men who rode off on camels. Now, when we talk about plunder, can we as individuals in our lives accumulate too much and then think because of what we've got, I'm better than anybody else? Nobody is as good as I am. But if we take what we have and share it, we don't gain any more favor with God. But what does it do inside your heart, knowing that you've helped someone? In church life, are there churches that have an account over here and they won't use it? They're saving it for a rainy day, but that rainy day never comes and the church dies. Then who gets their plunder? Does the Lord take it? No, it's moved somewhere else. But when it talked about David and them fighting all night long, this writer kind of points out that if the Amalekites were celebrating, they were probably partying. They were spread out different places. And use the word loosely, they were probably drunk. So they were asleep. And it's like David and his men just went from one small group to another and took care of them, took their lives, and captured. Now, also what happens to us, like David now has regrouped all of this, what happens if David decides, I'm taking all the credit?
Don't you think his heart was in the right place, you hate to say it that way, because it says, you know, back up in verse 6, where it says, that David strengthened himself in the Lord his God.
Mm-hmm.
So don't you think his heart, was he in a prayerful state about all this? Not how he prayed about killing people, all about that.
Well, that's...
But if he did what the Lord was instructing him, then evidently his heart was going in the right direction. Does that make sense?
Because it says, you know, David was a man after God's own heart.
Right.
So I think he had that.
Even killing people, I know that's just hard to kind of wrap around that. You can pray about it and then you're killing people. But evidently he was going the way the Lord wanted him to go, because in the end, it all worked out.
Mm-hmm.
All those folks were there, they got all their stuff back, you know. But to reach that point is hard to find that I'm going to pray about killing people.
They got their families back, too.
That's right.
Yeah, they recovered everything.
Yeah, that's kind of like today.
David didn't go around bragging and say, look what I did.
No.
Like Saul.
No.
And, an example today, you think about it, because we pray for them and we're so proud of them, but the military, those people our prayers are not to that they can kill 10 people in one day. Our prayers today are...
Protect us.
Are safe, and that they protect us. So, you know, that's something else that's hard to kind of wrap around.
But now... Do you see how it's changed, though, from the beginning? They wanted to stone David to death. But now, you've gotten my family back. You've got your family. We don't want to. But now we're quoting, really, they're saying this is David's, quote, plunder. But as the story goes, it says as they travel back to their town of Ziklag, David shared with little towns and villages along the way. And the writer brings out three points. He's expressing his gratitude to people who supported them or supported him while he was on the run from Saul all the time, because Saul could have killed David a long time ago, and none of this would ever taken place. David was showing that he's trying to restore and bring back the strength of Israel to the people. And then this writer says it marked him as a victorious king or general. Now, I don't know that David took it that way, but the followers of him you would just put David up on a pedestal. He's our man now. But while all of this is happening, like we said earlier, Saul is dying. He's taken his own life, has taken his life. But, and when they get back, and do you see this happen sometimes, let's say, family situations. There was this group of people in David's army, but only this many went to battle. The rest of them stayed back. They were tired from the previous battles. Well, the group that went and fought didn't think they should share part of the riches with the people that stayed back. Now, does that present a problem to David? David's, because they were part of them to begin with. It's just they were, quote, too tired and couldn't have gone on. But as he points out in verses 21 through 25, we'll kind of hash that. It says, when he came to the 200 exhausted men who were left behind, he says, they came out to meet David and his people with him. And as they approached, he greeted them. But all the evil men and troublemakers amongst David's followers said, because they did not go with us, we will not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, each man may take his wife and children and leave. And David's reply, no, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. He has protected us and handed over to us the forces that came against us. It says, who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of him who went down to battle. All will share alike. David made this a statute and ordinance for Israel that day to this. Now, the victory wasn't David's. It was the Lord's victory. And I think we can take from that, that's what David is trying to teach the men under him. Just because, and like we go back to a football team, just because I break my leg in the last game of the year and we go on and win the national championship, that doesn't mean that I don't get a ring. You're still part of the team. And I had a conversation yesterday with a gentleman who's been a coach in Montgomery a long time. And it kind of ties in with this. If all you think about is winning, you'll never be successful. But if you think about the people that you're involved with and you try to get to know them and care about them, then winning will take care of itself.
This also shows, too, because everybody wants to feel important. And everybody wants to be somebody. I mean, that's just a, and this scripture proves that from David, who was at the top of it, to the guys that stayed back, who just sat around and rested, but they watched, the things that were important that was left behind. They were just as important doing what they did as what David was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same thing in a church or in your job, even in your family. Everybody has a part to make it work. Because I remember years ago, Brother Billy talking about it was as important for someone to be in that nursery changing diapers as it was for him to be standing up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody in a church, and that's what David just proved, just because those 200 stayed back and didn't dirty their hands like they are killing anybody. When they got back, they welcomed David. It was just like they had been on the battleground with David. He rewarded them just like everybody else rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it'll be for us.
In the New Testament, the body of Christ, each person has a job or a function where everybody can't do the same thing. But it's good that we all have diverse talents or whatever, that it takes all of us to make the whole.
The body, the eye has one part, and the ear has one part, and the arm, all of it.
But if you think about it, we all have spiritual gifts, because everybody's spiritual gift was to be compassionate and giving all the time. But what would happen to the other gifts? You know, where would they go? Because they would never be addressed, and we would miss them. So, I mean, David is, but if he was asking about, when you think about David, when David's mentioned, I always just think about David being the shepherd. I guess because he just accomplished so much as a shepherd. Even though, you know, Psalms and his life is so full of controversy, but you just think of David as just being the shepherd.
Because then, and you talked about it, is, I mean, even in a workplace, if you're not all working towards the same goal, you're not going to be successful. And when there's one person who thinks that I do more than everybody else, it's going to throw up a little black flag. It's going to create a little sore inside the business. Nobody wants to get along. Because I remember years ago when I worked at Walmart, when you interviewed someone, you had a little series of questions you ask, or they answered to test their character, so to speak. But one of them was, like, I was the manager, should the manager have more perks given to them than, say, an hourly person who works for the company? Some would answer yes and some would answer no. But is that true? Just because you're the leader, does that mean you get more than those who are under you? Because I always looked at it, and I'll share this little tidbit. I didn't argue with them, but I had the opportunity to be rewarded once a year, bonus-wise, based on the things of the company going on. But the people working for us, underneath me, that wasn't offered anything. And I made ask one time, you know, well, you do all the work. No, I don't do all the work. If I didn't have these people, the work job wouldn't get done. So why isn't there something in place to reward them? But you couldn't get an answer. So, but it, I mean, it's true. If I mean, even, I hate to keep bringing it back to the church, but how many churches have failed because maybe they put too much pride and joy and emphasis on the pastor and made him feel like I am the king? And then nobody else wants to do anything, or they get so built up with themselves that they think they can do it all, and they don't want to involve anybody else in the church to help. It crumbles. But like David, now, it kind of ends up through all this. I mean, we know from reading, we know where God is leading David. He's going to be the king. He's going to be a top leader. But do you think through all this, you know, there again we go back. If David reaches that pinnacle by keeping everything that he had gained all along his journey, he wouldn't be successful. But the people see David is taking care of me, just like he's taking care of himself. And even though he's elevated to the status of a king, I want to work with him. I want to serve him because I know what kind of person he is, what kind of man he is, and then how I'll be treated. So, we'll just kind of close, and like Glenda brought it out, is the body of Christ has many members. And everybody is just as important as everybody else. But I think sometimes we lose sight of that a little bit. And that's where problems arise, is when maybe one person feels like they have more talents than anybody else, and then they start bringing people over to them and trying to convince them, and then you see separation and things fall.
But it's like David in this one, you know, he had some folks that were, you know, worldly or...
Oh, yeah.
And that's it. We experience that all the time. We have that in our lives all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But just like that old saying, you're only strong as your weakest link.
Exactly.
You know? So, and together and united, you're so much stronger than being separate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and an example like of a business is, look at Chick-fil-A. There's a Christian leader, and he's just come all the way down. Now, even the people that help you up with Linda they're just so important on the Chick-fil-A franchise thing. Those people are, I mean, you need them, handing out the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just as important as the guy that started the Chick-fil-A. And it's obvious in the way their service is and their attitude. So.
Yep. Ms. Lee. Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.